Case number 21300 Sant Luke's Hospital et al. Versus ProMedica Health Systems, Inc. et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Litback, you may proceed for the appellants.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Doug Litback for ProMedica. I'm joined by Chris Renner and Mark Wagner. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Justice Scalia's decision in Trinco held that a business has no duty to help a competitor absent extraordinary and rare circumstances that are not present here. In concluding otherwise, the district court made two fundamental legal errors that are independently dispositive. First, the district court misapplied the legal standard for analyzing a refusal to deal claim under Trinco, letting the Aspen exception swallow the general rule to no duty to deal. It ignored that under Trinco and the Tenth Circuit's decision in Christie Sports that a refusal to deal pursuant to an agreed-upon termination right cannot violate the antitrust laws as a matter of law.
Well, let's say you're right that the Aspen refusal to deal exception is narrow and rare, but it's also rare to reverse a district court in a preliminary injunction setting. That's why we call it abuse of discretion. So what do we do with that?
So here, Your Honor, there are legal errors that the district court made that this court should review de novo. And those legal errors are the misapplication of the legal standard for the refusal for analyzing a refusal to deal claim. And other courts, like Trinco and Christie Sports, have dismissed cases on the pleadings based on applying the correct legal standard. So this is a legal question before you. And the plaintiffs concede that. In their a letter to the court in response to our supplemental authority about the Facebook case, they acknowledged that the Facebook court applied a different legal standard that they disagreed with, and that's the legal standard that we're saying is the correct legal standard to analyze the refusal to deal claim, and the district court didn't apply that standard. And the court should review that de novo.
One error, the failure to accept ProMedica's business justification?
Correct. Oh, the legal error is that the district court never analyzed the business justifications as part of the refusal to deal analysis, and was required to do so under Trinco. And
what's your best case for the business justification for potentially turning customers away from the hospital?
It's profit maximizing behavior. It promotes the efficiencies of our narrow network. So the Paramount Health Plan has a narrow network strategy, where its sole purpose is to create efficiencies by sending patients in the Paramount plan to ProMedica hospitals. And to the extent that Paramount patients go to other hospitals, that adds cost and upward pricing pressure on the Paramount narrow network product. And so the efficiency is that, like, the more ProMedica can use Paramount to get low insurance and drive more volume to their ProMedica providers, then it can continue to offer low-cost insurance at the same time maximizing its hospital.
Basis, I thought the reason that ProMedica wanted St. Luke's in the first place is that there were general services that ProMedica offered that St. Luke's really didn't. And so they were in St. Luke's, had some specialty practices they were strong in, but other customers were then going to go to ProMedica for a lot of other services. And is the theory that by St. Luke's being acquired by McLaren, that those customers were then go to McLaren facility for their broader medical needs?
That's correct, Your Honor. McLaren St. Luke's is a very different competitor than St. Luke's was. And McLaren St. Luke's will now offer comprehensive services. For example, McLaren St. Luke's didn't offer cancer services. McLaren St. Luke's just made plans to start having cancer services about 1 mile from St. Luke's campus where ProMedica's cancer services.
Does McLaren have any other facilities in Lucas County?
At the moment, the only facility is McLaren St. Luke's.
So we wouldn't consider customers leaving Lucas County to go to Southeast Michigan to get their services through a different McLaren facility, right?
For tertiary care, yes, but not for general acute care.
So let's say you're right about all of this. How do you want this resolved? I mean, is it end if the PI is vacated? Does that make everybody happy on your side of the case? Or, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what the point of the bond part of the appeal is. Does that really matter anymore? There's a new enrollment period coming up, so presumably everyone wants some clarity before that. But is that the end of the case, if you're right?
If we're right, it should be the end of the case. Mm-hmm. The bond is meant to be in place. We've been harmed for a year.
That's kind of why I'm asking. Are you seeking money damages, or what's the point of the bond if you're not seeking money damages for the PI being put in place?
The bond is in place for recovering damages for the harm that has occurred throughout the course of the last year.
So maybe I'm missing something. One of us has got something wrong here. You wanted there to be a bond in place, right? And Judge Zuhari denied that request.
He didn't even address that request. He didn't consider it.
So what's the remedy at this point? I'm trying to figure out whether that matters anymore.
It doesn't. If you vacate the injunction, the bond doesn't matter. The second fundamental legal mistake the district court made was it didn't assess whether the refusal to deal harmed competition in a way that could create an antitrust injury as required by Nixon.
What's the difference between the Aspen, predatory conduct plus, so refusal to deal plus predatory conduct, and the antitrust injury under Indect and Nixon? Is there any space there, or is it the same inquiry?
There's some space there because the refusal to deal cases typically involve situations where there's substantial foreclosure or absolute foreclosure from the withheld input. And so, for example, in Otter Tail, a case relied on by the plaintiffs, the essential facility is, without it, the other competitors can't compete without access to the essential facility. But here we have the unique scenario where it's not clear that we, Paramount, are an essential facility that could substantially foreclose the plaintiffs through a refusal to deal and prevent them from competing in the provider market.
Would you take a moment to address the Section 1 claim and this change of control provision being anti-competitive?
So the Section 1 claim is an attempt by the plaintiffs to plead around the hard road to liability that refusal to deal claims present. Novell and Qualcomm have both analyzed Section 2 conduct-specific claims under Section 1 with the same test. And this court did something similar in the Trina Solar case when it was analyzing predatory pricing claims under Section 1, and this court said the same test applies. And so the Section 1 claim is just a way to try to circumvent the hard road to liability that refusal to deal presents.
With respect to the change of control provision, I think your friends on the other side say that was basically forced upon them at the time of the divestiture. They really had no choice but to agree to it.
That's implausible on its face because the FTC reviewed it and approved it.
Did they approve that specific line? I mean, how detailed is the FTC's review?
The FTC's review is pretty detailed in these divestiture cases.
Is that in this record?
It is, through the declarations. The Kruger Declaration speaks to how extensive the FTC
is. I can see them blessing the agreement at a high level, blessing that specific provision. I don't know if if there's evidence that goes that deep.
So the FTC three times, so like the ALJ and then the commission, both were asked by the complaint counsel to require as part of the remedy in the FTC merger case a duty to deal with the district court ordered here, and they rejected it twice. The ALJ rejects it, the commission then rejects it, citing Trinco, and then the FTC staff, in doing the divestiture agreement, permits this change of control provision because the assistance to St. Luke's was meant to be temporary and on the condition that they're not bought by another system, at which point the assistance wouldn't be needed. So it was a calculated decision by the FTC.
Can I ask you another question about the narrow network argument that you made? I think before the transaction in 2010 or whenever it was with St. Luke's, WellCare was added to the Paramount network. Is that consistent with your narrow network argument, or is it inconsistent in the sense that those doctors could also send patients to St. Luke's where they were doing business?
So it is consistent with our narrow network theory. So The physician services, like the narrow network has to fill all the gaps in coverage, and for physicians, you need to make sure you have adequate coverage for the network. And so the narrow networks typically have more independent physicians than, you know, hospitals that are not integrated with the health plan. And so the physicians then can refer patients to whoever's in the narrow network. And so if WellCare is in the network, and McLaren St. Luke's is in the network, we would be then losing patients. Paramedic would be losing patients to McLaren St. Luke's, which would be a you know, defeat the purpose of the efficiencies from the narrow network strategy.
Wouldn't they have been losing patients in the front end? Those doctors would still have been sending people to St. Luke's in 2009 like they might in 2021. What's the difference?
Because St. Luke's is a very different competitor than McLaren St. Luke's. That's the difference. So ProMedic in its narrow network contracting strategy has decided that it will let in its narrow network a community hospital. UTMC is in their narrow network. St. Luke's was in their narrow network for a period of time, but has never let a system like McLaren, you know, health system that has its own health plan.
Competitor. It's a different competitor because McLaren's going to build out St. Luke's to be this larger healthcare entity that's not currently. That's one of the points I was getting at earlier. I mean, McLaren's footprint right now is pretty narrow in Lucas County. It's big in Southeast Michigan, but I don't think we look at that market. So this is all on future plans that McLaren has to build out their network in Lucas County. And at that point, it'll be more of a competitor than it is today.
No, Your Honor, that's not correct, because McLaren St. Luke's has billions of dollars in revenue to fund, you know, the parent has billions of dollars of revenue to fund St. Luke's, has paid off its debt, is going to invest substantially in its services, is doing so already, and also has brought the McLaren health plan down to Lucas County. So now McLaren St. Luke's is now just like ProMedica, in that it's vertically integrated too, and I'm not aware of a refusal to deal case where the plaintiff also has its own access to the input. I'm not aware of a case like that.
So tell me what I'm missing here in terms of why the preliminary injunction hurts you. If you really like narrow networks, what is it that prevents Paramount this fall from saying, well, we've got the narrow network that includes St. Luke's, and then we've got a really narrow network that does not include St. Luke's, and then you price that out so everyone wants it, and doesn't go to St. Luke's. You end up in the same place. Why isn't that the answer to this? In other words, you're not really hurt by what happened.
But because we'd be right back here in front of you. The plaintiffs would, again, say that we're just trying to circumvent the order in that event.
I can ask the other side, but it seems to me you'd still be keeping St. Luke's. You wouldn't be invoking that provision. St. Luke's would still be available under a plan. It's not unusual to have more than one plan. And there would be a plan that didn't involve St. Luke's and presumably would be cheaper still because it's an even narrower network.
Sure, and I think that's hypothetically possible, but that's just not what the law requires. And the law doesn't require us to change our narrow network strategy to create a new plan that'll have new, like, extra costs.
The law doesn't require companies to litigate everything. Why not just do that and just solve the problem?
Well, the case is broader, too, than this one issue. The plaintiffs allege that this is all part of a larger scheme. There's also another claim that's been added that relates to the cancer center and restrictive covenant. So that won't dispose of the case.
Okay. Let me make sure there's not any other questions. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Full rebuttal. We'll hear from the other side. Mr. Ettinger?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
So let me plunge in on the refusal to deal, and you probably won't be surprised to hear me say that the business justification is a pretext on the facts. There was certainly substantial evidence to support the district court on that.
Did the court address business justification?
The district court rejected the claim that the district court said this was a previously profitable arrangement and effectively reached that conclusion. And in any event, the evidence supports the district court's conclusion. The business justification, which was not briefed or argued in great detail before the district court, is completely rebutted by what Your Honor talked about, and that is the WellCare termination. WellCare was in that network a long time. The evidence shows that lots of doctors were in that network. Nevertheless, they were terminated on the very same day, as was McLaren Health Plan. There's no justification for that, no reason.
The refusal to deal claims, I think we all agree, are pretty tough to bring. I mean, I'm essentially quoting, paraphrasing Trinco. And, you know, this case, to me, the analogy to the one case where it worked, Aspen, or at least the one case in the last 50 years, is as if Aspen Highlands was bought by a large national conglomerate. You wouldn't have said that the large Aspen company would have to continue to deal with the Little David because it was no longer a Little David anymore. They would have just been purchased by a larger entity. That seems to me the analogy to this case.
Your Honor, I think it's not because of a number of things. One is the WellCare termination, which they didn't have to do. And the only justification we heard from
What does that have to do with the point that St. Luke's has been bought by a very big company? They've merged with a very big company. You wouldn't have thought of Aspen Highlands as a victim if they had merged with a very large ski company.
Your Honor, I don't know if that's right. I mean, the issue is, what power does St. Luke's have? What position does it have in this market? The acquisition by McLaren didn't make St. Luke's the equivalent of the McLaren system. It provided an opportunity for St. Luke's to compete more effectively and challenge ProMedica's market power. That's why we're here.
Very strange to have a refusal to deal claim with someone who is just as big as you are.
Well, they're not just as big in the relevant market. They're much smaller, Your Honor, and that's the relevant question.
Just as well capitalized.
Just as well capitalized, but that's not, you know, the only question and far from the leading question in an antitrust.
You really think Aspen would have come out the same way if Aspen Highlands had been bought by an equivalent size ski company?
I think yes, Your Honor, under these facts, under Aspen's facts, where this was a popular venture, there was an evidence that it was profitable. The evidence today, the evidence before this court, that McLaren buying St. Luke's suddenly made the Paramount relationship unprofitable is based on nothing more than a couple of vague statements and declarations contradicting the pattern of behavior.
Is there a PI case in antitrust section 2 where money damages are all that's at issue and you get a PI? I mean, I've never seen something like this. Irreparable injury doesn't arise when all you're worried about is money, right? Aspen was not that. Aspen was after a jury trial. How in the world would you have a PI here where if you're right that you have a successful Section 2 claim, if you're right that you were going to be monetarily damaged, that's not irreparable injury. That's tall, give me the money in 3 years. Why would you have a PI in this setting? It makes no sense to me.
And where the loss of the money is included in loss of patients, loss of market position, loss of goodwill, as we've explained.
All compensable. I don't think that's hard to find an economist to compensate for all of that.
The economists will set up models, and the defendants will claim the models don't account for all that, Your Honor. But I think we've cited a bunch of cases.
And then you go to Aspen, you look at the Aspen case. You have a jury trial, and you get your money. That's how it works. I don't understand a PI in this setting. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Your Honor, I mean, we've laid out the arguments, and I guess all that I would add beyond those is that because of St. Luke's vulnerability, because of the effect that it will have long-term on its market position, that, you know, it's not simply something that money damages ultimately will recompense.
But the vulnerability was solved by having the deep pockets of McLaren.
Your Honor, that's not what the record shows. The record shows McLaren is putting in money, but, you know, McLaren is a system with a lot of hospitals, and it's not like they are an unlimited ATM for any given hospital.
Well, ProMedica seems to think there's a lot of viability in St. Luke's. They acquired it at one point. And now McLaren's done the same thing. I think Chief Judge Sutton has a fair point about being able to consider the resources and financial backing. Aren't there already announced plans to add a cancer center and do other things to enhance McLaren's footprint in the county?
Well, there certainly are, Your Honor, and that's, we think, why we're here. But that doesn't mean that St. Luke's is invulnerable by any means. We've explained why, and the undisputed evidence explains why this will set St. Luke's back several years in terms of making competitive investments.
Are there any cases where a court's found an antitrust violation where a party is basically just acting upon a contractual right it agreed to with the other side, which seems to be what's happening here?
And lots of cases. There are lots of exclusive dealing arrangements when they're illegal are, you know, often involved under a contract. I mean, Section 1, by its nature, prohibits agreements in restraint of trade, and many of those are written agreements. So I don't think
they're not usually.
I don't think the contract.
Your Section 1 claim, who is the agreement to violate the antitrust laws between the plaintiff and the defendant?
And that happens. There are a number of cases, Your Honor, and I can cite them, where tying arrangements are, what happens is the plaintiff refuses to go along and continue buying the tied product. The tying product is cut off, and that's provided a basis for relief for the plaintiff in that situation. And this is similar. We had a conditional refusal to deal, in effect, under the change in control provision. Said, if you go ahead and be acquired, then we can cut you off. They did, and St. Luke's did, and ProMedica did. And that provides a basis for the Section 1 claim. And the conditional refusal to deal there is really somewhat different than the situation under Section 2. And the reason is...
Why won't competition work here? In other words, let's say they're allowed to terminate. McLaren has an insurance arm. Why can't it offer insurance plans to the people that have used St. Luke's at a lower rate than Paramount offers? Why isn't that... I mean, you know who these folks are. Why not? Why doesn't that work here?
One difference is
the St. Luke's doctors keep all the work. Heck, maybe it grows if they have an effective advertisement.
There are several reasons. One is it takes a long time to get a new managed care plan up and running and successful. It takes years. It's very difficult to get a broad enough network. Secondly, perhaps most importantly, that network is never going to include ProMedica or ProMedica's doctors. And as the lengthy FTC record shows, ProMedica is effectively a must-have hospital in this market. The likelihood that that network will be successful is very slim. So to suggest that, you know, where there is...
Tell me what I'm missing. I thought the concern was the St. Luke's doctors.
I'm sorry, when you say the concern?
I thought that your concern was making sure the St. Luke's doctors could continue to provide care to folks. And without Paramount, the idea was that they wouldn't be providing that care anymore. And I'm making the point, why can't the McLaren insurance arm offer a better option for insurance, narrow network and all, and it can use St. Luke's?
The problem has to do with the dynamics of managed care competition, Your Honor. When employers make choices, they want plans that provide a broad range of alternatives for them. If McLaren Health Plan comes into this market with a St. Luke's narrow network, it's not going to be very successful.
McLaren, how about St. Luke's plus other McLaren entities?
They're going to try, Your Honor. It's difficult without ProMedica. It'll take a great deal of time, and I don't think one can assume that the market will correct the problem here in light of all those difficulties. The Anthem case, for example, described in great detail, in part through testimony by ProMedica's economist, about the difficulties in entry and success for new health plans. But and they're much greater here because...
17% share. That's not very overwhelming. I mean, this is mainly an insurance market, or at least it's a part of this is the insurance market. How is that a difficult, you know, barrier?
Your Honor, the barrier to entry has to do with gathering enough providers in the network and then being able to attract employers with that network. The 17% is not, the 17% Paramount has isn't the barrier to McLaren Health Plan being successful. If Your Honor is addressing the question of why 17% harm St. Luke's, I think we've outlined in detail why St. Luke's is why it has a special effect on St. Luke's, in part because the standard is does the termination contribute to the maintenance of monopoly power? And we think it does. It causes harm to St. Luke's, one of the very few competitors to ProMedica, and makes it much more difficult for it to compete with ProMedica, certainly in the medium term. Eventually, will the market correct all these things? 8-10 years out? Possibly, but I wouldn't quote Keynes on this, but in the long run, we're well past the threshold that the antitrust laws worry about, I think.
McLaren knew about all these risks before it decided to enter into this transaction, and it certainly did its due diligence and knew that this provision was in the agreement, the divestiture agreement between ProMedica and St. Luke's. And it was willing to, it took on, I mean, you're talking about business, in every business venture there's risk, you're talking about the risk, the market could change one way or the other, but McLaren knew about all this going in, they thought it was a worthwhile purchase. I'm not here to critique, say that was a good or bad idea. ProMedica wanted to buy the same facility at one point also, so it seems to me you're just presenting us with some business risks that every business venture is going to have, but especially with McLaren knowing about all this in advance, including the contractual provision, it had to assume ProMedica was going to exercise.
Your Honor, with all due respect, if there's an antitrust violation that may be on the horizon and an entity decides to go ahead with a business decision recognizing it may face an antitrust violation, I don't think the fact that it may have foreseen that and chose to do so as a defense that protects the violator.
By violation, it's a clause, again, that your client agreed to. I'm struggling with that sort of foundational point that your client agreed to this as part of a negotiation. In fact, at the time of the negotiation, there was another option to sell St. Luke's to another entity that would have raided it, and St. Luke's didn't want that. So there was a negotiation, and one of the things they negotiated was this provision.
Well, I don't think that negotiation creates a defense when it was backed into a corner, as Your Honor alludes to, you know, by the prospect of being acquired.
Well, I'm saying negotiate out of that corner, negotiate another way. I mean, you're sort of saying it's a contract of adhesion, or we just should ignore the contractual provision?
I'm saying if a contract violates antitrust laws, like a timing agreement, like a resale price maintenance agreement.
This isn't really a timing agreement.
This is the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm saying if a contract violates the antitrust laws and then the party violates it and is punished for it, that's, you know, that party can have a remedy. Now, the big if is, does it violate the antitrust laws? We go back to that. But I think the mere fact that there was ultimately an agreement on something that St. Luke's didn't like at all and was forced to do doesn't create a defense, it seems to me.
Well, maybe it's not an absolute immunity defense. Maybe, I don't think that's what Judge Radler's saying, but it is reminiscent of what Justice Scalia said in Trinco, where you have the baby bells, highly regulated, and Trinco makes the point, in a world in which you already have a lot of regulation, which, by the way, was designed to deal with monopoly problems, the courts ought to be hesitant to add another layer of unpredictable regulation. That's, I'm paraphrasing exactly what Trinco says. Why isn't this a good analogy? You already have the FTC regulating. The regulating allowed this contract option. The court should steer clear of this. You can write the FTC if you want.
There's no evidence that the FTC specifically looked at this provision and decided that it was appropriate.
This is a little bit like a jury trial verdict. We assume everyone followed the instructions. We assume the FTC read everything in the papers, and they approved everything. You don't have to have some evidence. Did you look at paragraph 17 and the last clause? That's not how it works.
And do you assume that the FTC concluded that whatever happened years later, that would be okay too? Because that's the situation.
I'm not making the immunity point. I'm saying it's fair to say they didn't have a problem with this. And back to Trinco. We should be very hesitant as judges to add another layer of regulation when the regulators have already shown an intense interest in this exact healthcare market.
And Trinco was about a situation where there was ongoing detailed regulation at the time of the event. Here we're talking about an approval of a divestiture with many terms that the FTC, for whatever reason, didn't act to prevent this particular term, and then action on it years later when the FTC is long gone from the scene. And I don't think that they're comparable at all. And Judge Scalia and Trinco, talked about all the difficulties in trying to monitor an antitrust decree here. That's not true here. Here it's very simple. There's a contract, said continue it for the term you agreed to continue it for. That's all we're talking about here. The bottom line here, Your Honors, is we have a history of an effort by ProMedica to maintain its monopoly through a lot of actions, many directed at St. Luke's, but also at UTMC. And then we have a situation where on the day that the change in control was enacted, they terminated three separate entities. I don't think there's a way to interpret that as intended to do anything else but suppress competition, and not to protect Paramount. The one justification for, and the WellCare story, Your Honor, is an important part of this. The only justification we've heard for the first time today why WellCare was terminated, well, they may refer cases to St. Luke's. The problem is if they're out of network, the hospital's out of network, the physician's not going to refer cases there because the patient will have to pay way too much. It doesn't make sense, and that's why you heard it for the first time today, and it's not in any of the briefs, not in any of the affidavits. There is no explanation for the WellCare termination. It's the dog that didn't bark. Except that the notion that this was done in order to preserve a profitable relationship is simply a pretext, and they were really doing it because they were trying to suppress competition, which they felt for the first time would be vigorous and would threaten their monopoly power. That's the only explanation for the behavior, and the fact that a couple affidavits after the fact said, well, we were worried about the effect on Paramount with no detail, no analyses, and a different prior voluntary course of behavior, is simply not persuasive. And I think the district court judge, did not act clearly erroneously at looking at this pattern and saying, St. ProMedica's explanations for this pattern don't fit the facts. They really don't. Particularly with regard to WellCare, because there's no explanation for that. And therefore, it must have been intended anti-competitively, and therefore, it can be actionable under Section 2. I guess that's my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Litvak.
Chief Judge Sutton, I'd like to go back to the question that you asked me about creating two narrow networks, one narrow network with the plaintiffs in it and this new narrower network. The issue there is what Trinco warns of. The network that includes the plaintiffs in this case would have forced sharing and all the problems that Trinco cites. Less incentives to invest, less competition, could potentially create collusion. And so that's why that option is just not a preferable idea from a market solution point. The court should not regulate the dealings with the parties. They should let competition work, and it will work. And we've seen the inklings of how competition will work in this market. McLaren Health Plan has entered in response to the fact that ProMedica tried to terminate the Paramount relationship. And then the district court ended that entry, that competition, with one fell swoop of the pen and putting this injunction in place. If you lift the injunction, McLaren Health Plan have every incentive to try to get more members into its plan and try to compete vigorously with ProMedica, and that's what we want. Judge Radler, I want to go back to your question about business justifications. I want to point out that the business justifications are unrebutted, only rebutted by attorney argument, and the plaintiffs don't meet any of the elements of the Trinco test.
What is the business justification?
The promoting the efficiencies of the narrow network contract and preventing free riding by the plaintiffs. That's the business justification, but the court shouldn't need to get there. It's right at Christie Sports, because there was an agreed upon termination right, that's the end of the analysis. And the plaintiffs have no response to Christie Sports. That case is dispositive as a matter of law.
The Tenth Circuit case is dispositive as a matter of law?
Well, it's interpreting Trinco. So
be it.
Well, under Trinco, there's no prior course of dealing here because of the agreed upon termination right. It's entirely consistent with that course of dealing. The plaintiffs knew in advance that we would only deal with St. Luke's if they weren't acquired by another system. And then they were acquired by another system, and we exercised that termination right. That's entirely consistent. And I'll also point out that the WellCare terminations are irrelevant. They happen in a completely different market. The plaintiffs have put forth no evidence that...
Is that a completely different market?
Physician services market. So WellCare operates in physician services. Physician services are an input to the relevant market that the plaintiffs defined here, which is the general acute care inpatient hospital market. So this is conduct that occurs in a completely different market, and the Qualcomm case tells us that conduct and harm occurring outside the relevant market can't be used in a different market to meet a burden. Unless the court has more questions for me, I'd like to just thank you for your time.
I think we're set. Thanks to both of you for your very helpful briefs, and thanks as always for answering our questions, which we always appreciate. Thank you. The case will be submitted.